Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And let me also say, if you are inclined or understand the power of prayer, don't hesitate to actually start trying to organize or get with other people. As a matter of fact, this is not about me. This is not about the party. This is not about the state. This is about the Constitution and restoring the rule of law and restoring our Republican form of government. So be very precise in your vote, or not in your vote, I'm sorry. Be very precise, because I'm going to talk a little bit about voting. But be very precise in, you know, what you're praying for, that we actually hope that those who are working in this endeavor of getting our government into constitutional compliance, that they have their successes. And so with that, as I already kind of played the card or showed my hand, I want to talk for a second about the election, because when we look at, because I just realized that Texas just closed out, or just about to close out, their registration for election. How is it that they have this late in the game ability for somebody to register to vote? In the old days, when we look at how you registered to vote, you registered to vote based on whether you own property or not. And as a matter of fact, you didn't have the ability to travel around like they do today. So in other words, the vulnerability is that because we're so mobile as a society, we actually have the ability to travel so much that what's keeping people from being registered, especially over on the East where the states are much smaller, much more accessible, where you could actually do a whirlwind tour over the course of a week or on weekends and literally get out and vote through these different systems and be registered and vote in these different systems. I remember in the 2000 election where Bush and Al Gore were facing off, I remember a person bragging in Wisconsin that they voted 9 times. And the adage was, vote early and vote often. Folks, this is an indictment on how vulnerable our election system is. And the real problem is we have people that do not care. The ends justify the means. And when we catch people to doing this, they do not lose their citizenship. So most people think that the federal government has the power over citizenship. They don't. The states have the power over their own citizenship, and that was clearly evident in the 1795 and Uniform Rule for Naturalization. When the federal government laid this out, they basically laid it out that the state had the responsibility. So we need to really start looking and re-examining what the heck we're doing. And I know everybody's talking about the voter fraud, the election fraud, all of these things, but I think that we also need to include in the conversation citizenship. Is everybody worthy of citizenship just because you were born to two natural citizens? In other words, they were naturally born, your parents, they lived here, they were citizens, now you become a citizen. I honestly believe that we need to change that. I think we need to start proving that you are actually an advocate for the Constitution, because they lie in twain. You cannot divide a person and the Constitution and say, oh, well, I'm a citizen, but I don't support that Constitution. I support, you know, a communist form of government, a socialist form of government. I support this unconstitutional government that's operating. That, my friends, is an indictment. that we have actually watered down, and we've allowed our school system to water down what it is and what it means to be a citizen. We need to restore a process that will quickly revoke a person's ability to vote and ability to be a citizen. And as a matter of fact, I think that people really have to prove themselves to understand that they need to be a part of demanding constitutional compliance, because that is our real problem today. This is what you hear me talking about all the time, getting committees to actually start demanding constitutional compliance of their public servants. And if you're not a citizen demanding that, then you shouldn't be a citizen. Remember, every citizen can be and should be compelled to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. It's that simple. So the other thing I noticed before I get into the movement and why counties matter most and so forth, it just shocks me. It shocks me that there is an organization, a national organization, that is in control of our shipping. In other words, this strike, a three-day strike in the ports, that they had the ability to strike and shut down the entire nation's receiving and exporting goods. Are you kidding me? Now, when we look at the sovereignty of states and how a union has actually been able to reach across and operate and take this type of approach, then that union needs to be dissolved. That union is a weapon, and it should not be operating. It should not, because it's one thing if it's something that happens in the state, but I have a problem with unions, period. But the bottom line is that when they can actually reach across, that actually starts violating the Commerce Clause and violates the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, when we look at protests in the streets, when we look at protests in a city, every city actually has these things called, you know, commerce laws. And I'll basically spell it out this way, because we've talked about this on the show, that if you want to actually, if you've got a problem with government, then your job is to actually go in and petition government for the redress of grievances. If you go out into the streets and you stop traffic, you're violating the rights of people to be able to inject and insert themselves into commerce, be able to effectively operate, go to work, those types of things. It's the same thing with you when you block access on a sidewalk. The right to commerce is a fundamental right for every person. The right to commerce being blocked by a union nationwide is a constitutional violation. In other words, that organization has put itself above the law. We can't have that. We can't have that. It's one thing to say, you know, we have, you know, this, I deserve more money, but to say collectively, we all deserve more money, that doesn't speak right. Now, I do understand that corporations are way too big when we're looking at how these corporations function and operate. Just remember, this is all unconstitutional. One corporation setting out its own policies of how it operates across every state in the union? No, no, no. The states are supposed to have control over their own corporations. And if the states need to actually sever that ability for the union and even these corporations to operate identical in one state to the next. There is no constitutional allowance for the federal government to allow a corporation to function across state boundaries and give them that carte blanche authority to dictate and rule the states. Not at all. The states are the sovereigns. The states are the parties to that compact. The federal government's only job is to make sure one state doesn't wage economic warfare against another. But when we look at how states are supposed to be managing corporations, they have full autonomy. And basically, this is how we've been played. We've been played for corporations to be able to seize and do control. This is why when you hear me say we have a corporate form of government, we have an activist form of government too, because when unions, these communist activists actually get out there and they start shutting us down and they have this right to do so. Are you kidding me? Anyway, so there's a few things in the news I just want to go over because I realize that we have not had the time. One of the things I see when I actually go like on TalkStream Live or you go out and to some of these news agencies or informational agencies on the web, you'll actually start finding how these announcements regarding bird flu are getting out of hand. As a matter of fact, they've already announced, I saw this a long time ago, that 33 herds have been infected with bird flu. This was a while ago. And the federal government is basically saying that these herds need to be put down. What? They're actually killing. Now, why is it that the bird flu problem is only existing in the United States? Are you hearing anything in Mexico? I guess there's something magical about the United States boundary where we're not hearing the entire food process or the entire food chain throughout the world is being decimated by the bird flu. There is a huge propaganda campaign. And oh, by the way, if you love chocolate, they're also propagating this idea that there is going to be a massive shortage of chocolate. They're saying that the bacteria or something like that is affecting them. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that is a hullabaloo. We're being lied to. Now, there's no doubt in my mind the chemicals that they're spraying is having an adverse effect on people, on plants, and life on this planet. But don't let them get away with telling you that these bacteria, these living organisms are, you know, actually all of a sudden spawning. I mean, when had we ever had a virus affecting chocolate? So I think that maybe if there is a virus affecting chocolate, it was concocted just like the Wuhan virus. They're doing things to affect us because there's too many people and they need to kill billions of us off. They need to ramp up their efforts. They need to ramp up what the heck they're doing and coming after us. So as we kind of go down this path of hearing things regarding the bird flu, because this is the next stage of propaganda. This is going to be the next stage of we got to shut you down. Folks, remember this. And as a matter of fact, maybe we need to create an emergency powers petition so that that's available on the repository. But when we're hearing these cases, because what they're basically saying is, this just came out in the news, that the leftist in California reported the two confirmed cases of bird flu infection in the Central Valley dairy workers. In other words, two people got it from the cows. What? What? Only in California, right? Only in California would this actually make the news, because maybe they got two people that they could possibly infect or basically make false assertions. I have no faith in anything that we're reading anymore. I can't believe any of this stuff. Climatology. They're now telling us that parts of icy Antarctica are turning green with plant life as the region is gripped by extreme heat events. Heat events in Antarctica. Come on. I can understand that, you know, weather changes and so forth. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to play a narrative that actually gets people into this mass panic. The other thing I'll say is I've actually seen a map. This was forwarded around by conservatives, that when the sea levels start to rise, they're showing how much of America will actually be underwater. I'm here to tell you that what they're propagating out as far as the sea line going up and the map that they're showing is not geographically, it's kind of like it's not autonomously the I'm gonna butcher that word. It is not geographically correct. There are several mountain ranges on the West Coast, and they're basically showing all of California is just gone. All of it's gone. Do you realize how big and how tall those mountain ranges are? There's just no way the water's going to get that high. I mean, there's not that much ice to melt unless aliens import, you know, a massive amount of water or do something where they defy physics and everything else. It's just not going to happen. It can't happen. So we got to stop allowing them to create this fear and so forth. And, oh, by the way, they've been trying to affect our ability to make guns and to regulate guns in America. And now the Supreme Court is going to decide whether Mexico can sue U.S. gun makers. What? What? So I'm having a problem with this because, bottom line, the ability for a foreign entity to come in. Remember, we're bringing this up in the Constitution. Go read Article 3 and you show me where a foreign state has the ability to go in and sue an entity within a state, because that's what a gun maker is. In the old days, the people that were making guns were private citizens and maybe small family businesses, not massive corporations. But what we're looking at is, where is the ability for them to actually go and sue within a state or to sue with a federal government jurisdiction? So this is all a play against our rights. That's all this is. And they're using courts. They're using courts to break down these barriers that are protecting us. Period. Now, another thing that's kind of interesting is that there was a, you know, this debt forgiveness process. Well, so just recently, Shelp, S-C-H-E-L-P. He's an appointee from Donald Trump, and he's a judge. I don't know, I forget what state he's in. But he basically put another injunction blocking Biden's ability to forgive debt. Almost a trillion, it was like 700 and some billion dollars that they were going to give these kids that made bad debts and give these kids this free money so that they can actually start doing things instead of paying their obligations. Folks, when we really look at whether the federal government can even do that or whether they can even create these types of loans, they created this problem. They knew that there would be a lot of people that were drinking at the well. I told you personally, I knew a person that lived so long in the school system taking on debt and debt. The only reason this person did that was because they realized that they couldn't pay back that debt. And so they literally got a string of different degrees and ended up having to get divorced to protect their assets. Because, you know, they went too far. They went too far in the system. And technically, that person should have just been able to claim bankruptcy. But they've done this deliberately to create this problem so the government can actually provide handouts to those who, it's like weaponizing a demographic. Because when you look at the majority of the people that have that debt, the majority of those people are, you know, young kids. I should say not young kids, young adults, voters who are weaponized. So we need to actually start, you know, pulling back from the federal government and allowing the states to start regulating our citizenship. We need to actually start taking citizenship from people that are not supporting the Constitution. That has to be the metric. That has to be the measure. If you are not willing to support the Constitution, because remember, like I said, all people must be compelled, if necessary, to defend the Constitution, defend their state against enemies foreign and domestic who are attacking the Constitution. Again, not the party, not the person, not the orange man. If you're attacking the Constitution, then you have no business being here. And Bob Ferguson was one of those guys. So what we want to do is I need to kind of peel back. And we've talked a lot about in the last couple of Mondays and Fridays, I have dove into the warfare tactics that have been exercised by the federal government, that are currently being exercised by the federal government against the states and against we the people. Now, I need to help you understand that the only way we're going to get this heel off of our neck is we have to start taking a stand. We are here to help you. We're here to help educate you. If you want to become a champion of the Constitution, we will be happy to help. Because what we need is we need a lot of people to actually start leading. When I say a lot of people, we're talking thousands. We need thousands of people because how many counties are out there? We've got 3,000 plus counties. And that's just at the county level. We need to actually propagate enough to where from the county level to the state level to the federal level, we have an army of champions of the Constitution. When we really start thinking about it, what it's going to require, you have to start understanding the Constitution. It's not rocket science. This is why we go through this. This is why we've got Tammy Young this year going through the Constitution so that she can actually read the words, and then we can talk about what those things mean. It's not that hard. It really is not that hard. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to create statesmen, because technically when you read these petitions, they actually build upon what you're learning with the Constitution, and you're learning how the Constitution is being violated. Now you actually have, if you want to call it a script, I don't think it's a script, because once you understand what these petitions do and you can start advocating that these petitions need to be signed, they need to be pushed forward so that we can obtain constitutional compliance. Think about this. When you're getting these petitions that we've already made for you, you're getting this education. How is this not? An opportunity for somebody to actually become a Thomas Jefferson, a Rufus King, or a Johnny Come Lately, to actually be able to step in and actually become the advocate for restoring our rule of law and restoring our constitutional form of government. So, as we start going through this, what we need to do is we need to get organized. And this is where we start understanding what this movement is. This movement is a county movement. It's a community movement. It starts with your community. And all you've got to do is actually help people understand that the Department of Transportation is a violation against the Constitution. We've got videos too. What do we need to do to make you successful? That is where we're committed. We're committed to try to give you some videos that provide a level of shock value to be like, wow, I never knew that the Department of Transportation was not with, their ability to do that wasn't in the Constitution. Who would have thunk that? And getting people to start recognizing and acting upon these things, this becomes big. This becomes a huge opportunity for you to actually start leading people. And when people start understanding, then it's not about just leading them that they're conscripted to be your followers. You need to help them lead too. The more people that we get leading, and the more people that, what is leading? What does a leader do? A leader does the right thing. Managers do things right. Managers follow the process. They do what they're told. Leaders actually stand up and they do the right thing. We want an army of leaders. One of the things that we'll get into when we come back is, how we do this and how we actually start creating this team and how important the First Amendment petition is a part of all of this. So when we come back, We will dive into that, and we'll talk more about the movement. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so when we're creating a movement, what we need is we need a movement. We need a miracle. And I'll be the first one to tell you that we need to make attempts in every direction. A lot of people think, well, let me try this. And the reason why people succeed is because they have tried a numerous different attempts in different directions with different types of attempts. What I'm trying to help you understand, when we look at Martin Luther and the movement he created, he didn't originally say, I'm going to go and, you know, become popular with the people so that I can get the people to revolt against the Catholic Church or to take, you know, to reclaim Christianity. No, what he did was he called out the Catholic Church to comply. He petitioned them with 95 theses, 95 separate petitions, 95 separate complaints for the redress of grievances. So what he did was he called them out to say, look, the scriptures say this, you need to do this. Now, he did this on the, you know, on the chapel door, and very few people, however many people it was, that really saw it and maybe talked about it, but it wasn't news. That's why everything that we're doing isn't being reported, and it won't be news. And as a matter of fact, it will be ignored until we get to a point where they can't ignore it anymore. And so there's ways of doing this. And as a matter of fact, what's going on in Washington State is more of a miracle than it is a movement at this point, because we actually have county legislators, county representatives that are just fed up and they want to do something. So just imagine you have yourself, your board of supervisors, you got your commissioner, whatever you call your county legislator. And that those folks really do care what's going on. And all of a sudden you give them a little bit of information of what they can do. Well, then they can start actually acting. But I'm here to tell you that they can't do this without you. In other words, they actually have to start rallying we the people. They need to get we the people to become actively involved. You know what? You're going to have to take a little time out of each week to go sign petitions. You're going to have to take a little time out each week to understand, you know, a little bit of what's going on. You know, because this is not going to be in your local news. You have to start helping people understand, what is your liberties and what is your freedom and what is living in America? What does it mean to you? Because this is what's on the line. People have no idea, very few people, I can't say people don't, but very few people understand the evil that's coming. As a matter of fact, 9 times out of 10, when people are overthrown, when a society is overthrown, it usually happens from within, and it usually happens in such a way that by the time the final foot, you know, drops, then that is when it's too late. But we now have time. This is kind of one of the reasons why there are people around the nation that I know of that are actually saying prayers for these commissioners, for all people to, you know, to hear his voice, to listen and do what is necessary to reclaim this republic. Do you have to be religious to be involved in this? No. I think the good Lord knew if you just have to care about your free agency, your choice, your liberties, and wanting to preserve the land of liberty. Whether you, whether at this point in time you even have, you know, an affinity towards anything spiritual or whether you're aspiritual. It doesn't matter if you care about liberty, because he knew we would get to this point. And he knew that inherent with all people, whether you're religious or not, you want to be able to choose for yourself. Even though we have been indoctrinated and we've made the choices that we've been trained to do, deep down we all want to be able to think we actually have control over what we're going to eat. We're going to have control over what car we buy, what clothes we wear. That is called liberty. And it is basically, you know, just the fundamental forms of liberty that, you know, we're appreciating. Because really, when it comes down to, do you have the full right to be able to actually stand up in the public square and truly speak out against government? Well, look what happened on January 6th. It wasn't even a burning down of the DC. It wasn't even doing what they should have done. As far as I'm concerned, they should have actually called out and demanded Congress be pulled out of chambers because they locked them out. Not that they should have used violence, but they should have basically been calling upon the president, who's supposed to faithfully execute the laws, and call out these scoundrels who locked down the government to say, we're not here to redress your grievances. We're not here to represent you. We're here to do what we choose to do. And that is not our government, folks. When we look at what our government is doing, that is not our government. That is an illegitimate body of people and actions being taken that are, this is how they're controlling us. This is how they're taking us down the tube. They're taking us down the drink. And we are all being sucked down with them. What they're doing is not legitimate. What they're supposed to be doing is supporting the Constitution. We've gotten so far beyond the barriers of the Constitution that people think it's too late. It's not too late. Because the manner of the Constitution isn't just this piece of parchment. It is a compact. It is a sacred compact that was made and supported, written for, and by the states, and it requires the states in its, basically, as Madison said, in its sanctity and in its, what was it, dignity, because it was the dignity and sovereignty of the states that created that compact. So when we look at the state level, that is the same thing in play at your county. Your county is the parties to your state compact. Even though you may have been a state out of the original 13 states that existed when they ratified the Constitution, the counties are still the parties to that state compact. And in a New York call this week, I pointed out that there are a few of those states that actually, and other states in the Union, that have galvanized in their Constitution every 20 years, the state of New York revisits whether they are to consider a new constitutional convention to write a new constitution. Now, that happened in 2017. It was brought up. Well, that's 13 years away. And I go, that gives you 13 years or 12 years now. It gives you 12 years to actually start creating your county constitutions and actually take back your government at the county level so that by 2037, the counties will be ready to say, we are ready to invoke a constitutional convention and take back all these powers. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, once you get to a critical mass with the counties that have constitutions, then your county should be able to actually call for that constitutional convention to occur even sooner. When they're ready, they can call it. Why? How can they do that? That's not in the state constitution. It is the fundamental tenets and the nature of compacts. The parties to the compact have the ultimate control. If they're so upset, if they recognize that the compact has been shredded and is not being observed by that creature that they created. So what's the creature that the counties created? The state. The state government and that state constitution was created by the counties, just like the federal constitution. So when we actually start, you know, getting this movement going, it is all about helping people understand and educate themselves on the importance of a limited and defined constitution, a limited and defined government. We are not to have the all-powerful government on this part of the earth. And as a matter of fact, I believe that it is contrary to his design that any nation and any people be subjugated to that level of power. That we the people are to actually control our government, not vice versa. And again, you've heard me say this, that I can't believe that it was his design that only the people that lived in these latitudes in North America between the Pacific and the Atlantic, that, you know, though only these people can live in the life of liberty and have the freedom to choose. No, I have a problem understanding how our Creator loves us, but he only loves the people that live in this world more, or this part of the world more. I just have a problem with that. I believe that we're all people are to enjoy liberty. That was his design, that we could all actually choose for ourselves. And when we look at Christianity, that is the fundamental tenet of Christianity. And it's a fundamental tenet of human nature. Every person wants to be able to choose for themselves. Like I said, even the communists will actually put aside communism when it comes to what they're going to eat, when it comes to what they're going to do that night, what, you know, whether they're going to have, you know, sleep on the floor or whether they're going to sleep in a bed. Everybody wants choices. And liberty is what guarantees those choices. If you have no liberty, you have no choice. So when we start talking about how you create this, we have calls. I do mentoring. And I will sit down and I will help you. I will help your group, your organization. In this past week, actually in the past 2 weeks, I've had people from Kentucky, Tennessee, Minnesota, and what was the other one? Pennsylvania, where we don't really have any mentoring calls. Technically, Minnesota, I've done some mentoring in Minnesota. There are good people in all of these states. There are good people in all of these states. So what's the problem? What we have to do is we have to help you start understanding what it takes to get organized. Now, organizational structure, you know, you need some functions for an organization, right? You need to have a secretary. You need to have a treasurer. You know, somebody that's keeping track of the money. You need to have, you know, somebody keeping track of the minutes and maintaining documentation, that type of stuff. When you look at government and you look at any corporation, any entity, there are fundamental tenets. There's fundamental functions within those organizations. So even though you may just be starting and you're getting like-minded people, one of the things that as you get a few people together, one of the things that you have to do is you have to start accepting roles and responsibilities for everybody. And as a matter of fact, everybody has to become a recruiter. And everybody should be self-training and actually help train each other. You know, as a matter of fact, if you haven't gone through, you know, the different petitions and so forth, what I would do is I would actually have one, you know, hand out a petition per person. You know, some of them may be a little shorter, so you get two. The longer ones, you get one. Go through the petitions. Then when you meet, you can actually talk about what this petition does and why it's so important. Because that way you're actually learning from each other. So you're not just self-training, you're actually co-training, so that maybe we don't all have to read the petitions to understand the constitutional arguments that are made in them. But we all need to have this responsibility of recruiting. And the way we recruit is we get people to say, hey, I've got a petition. Would you be willing to sign it? And we want you to understand that this is a First Amendment petition. This is something that if you sign it, as a matter of fact, I don't know if I have the disclosure, but I need to put the disclosure on the website, because the disclosure sheet basically says that the Constitution guarantees you have your rights secured, that the rights of the people be secure in them, in their persons and their effects and so forth. So if government says we want to see the signatures on this, we don't have to give them to them. Why? Because we don't have to trust them. And especially they cannot compel us to give them, at least as a person, they can, if we, they don't trust us, they have to have probable cause and to have a judge sign off on a warrant. When we look at many of these warrants that are being executed today, especially in the corrupt cities and so forth, I mean, they're problematic. But bottom line, when you start organizing and you get these signature sheets, you do not have to disclose those signature sheets. So in other words, people shouldn't have the excuse to say, well, I don't want my name on a piece of paper. When they read the disclosure, they will recognize that this is just literally getting you to sign so that they can keep track and make sure that you don't sign 10 times. You know, you don't, every grocery store where their petition drives are occurring, they may not have known you signed the other petitions and you sign it again. We don't want to inflate our numbers. This is about just an organizational integrity. Even though there's not going to be people checking, you know, whether these people signed it or these people are legitimate citizens. Actually, the one thing that we do need to do is we also need to make sure that the people that are collecting the signatures are verifying that you are a U.S. citizen. You got to have some good ID, or they at least have to know you, or they at least have to have a good reason why they would say that's a U.S. citizen. I mean, shoot, if you go to the polls today, anybody that goes to the polls is a U.S. citizen, according to the government, because they want anybody and everybody to be there, even invaders who aren't U.S. citizens. They're calling them citizens. This is why we can't trust government. This is why they are doing things that are actually antithetical to what they're supposed to be doing, protecting our sovereignty and protecting our Constitution and defending it. So we actually have a slide sheet on taking action on reclaiming the Republic, and it's basically the formula of how to create a constitutional county. At the very end of this, you'll find the laundry list of what your county needs to have done to basically finish and be completed as a constitutional county. In other words, if you adjoin to the CPSOA and you go pay $50, $100, whatever it costs to get a little certificate from the CPSOA, I forget what the CPSOA is. It's Sheriff Mack. Anyway, this is how you get it. This label is a constitutional county. And I think it's chief police officers. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. I will give you that on Monday because I forgot what the acronym stands for. But bottom line is that just because you're paying somebody doesn't mean that you're a constitutional county. You actually have to be functioning with common law courts. You need to have a militia actually instored and invoked by the sheriff. You need to have very specific things, criterias to actually become a constitutional county.
You know, as we've already gone through this, we've gone through many of the parts of the Constitution already. We've proven that what the federal government has done, and I'm going to say this, and I know that there's definitely one person out there that is jumping for joy when I say this, that the draft, the concept of a federal draft system is unconstitutional. The forming of the army, the forming of the motherland protection entity is the militia. The militia is under the control and management of the states, not the federal government. When the federal government has the need, they call up the state militia. The Dick Act of 1903 perverted this entire process without amending the Constitution, ergo it became a violation of the Constitution. The federal government cannot violate those words. They only have the power to call forth the militia. They do not have the power to basically deal directly with the people to say, you must register with our draft. The invoking of the draft was a direct violation of the Constitution. The states can have their own draft, and states can actually make sure, and as a matter of fact, the better states will probably make sure that every child in the education system learns gun safety tactics and those types of things. So that by the time a citizen obtains the age of 17, or a child obtains the age of 17 in their state, then they understand what their job and function is as a member of the militia, as a basic rifleman in the militia, a basic war fighter in the militia. That way, you know, you don't have to go to some boot camp. And you know, and this is how we actually get rid of the social programming. When we start teaching people that we all are accountable to adhere to the law, then we don't actually start thinking that we're above the law and start using civil disobedience because we just don't like the law. It's not about blindness to the law. You got to remember that the law is limited and defined. Does the government have the authority today? Does the federal government have the authority today to dictate what drugs are legal and what drugs are illegal? What is the process of the drugs coming forth? I mean, when we look at just this whole environment of drugs, pharmaceuticals, and everything else, they have no authority in the Constitution at all. None. So if all of a sudden heroin and cocaine is going to be illegal, your state has to make it illegal instead of allowing the federal government to say, okay, these things are illegal now. We don't need the federal government to police ourselves. That is our job. So the fact is, when they started creating these wars and these armies, and as a matter of fact, in America, I'm talking about the war on drugs, but when we look at how this all started with Prohibition, and how they assumed these authorities of the FBI and the ATF. That they didn't have the authority to do that. The Constitution, even the Prohibition Amendment, did not give them the authority to do that. It gave them the authority to actually write laws of how to execute that, but the clause in the Constitution that still exists today, that's never been changed, is the only entity in executing the laws of the Union is the militia. So, folks, this is how important your role is, because they know that you're not going to actually go through your county, go through your community, go through your state, enforcing laws that you know are not legitimate laws. This is why I keep saying that the militia and this design of the militia in this republic is the ultimate check on government. And they don't like that. They want you to do what they tell you to do, which is why they've completely undermined it, and which is why they've completely subverted it, which is why we're in the mess that we're in today. So, as we start getting you to actually start taking steps, you know, it's not that hard. As a matter of fact, one of the things we'll tell you is reach out to those people who think they're on a path. Reach out to those people who think they're involved in an organization that is actually, they think that, oh, we're going to save the Constitution. And I'm here to tell you they can't. Tactical Civics, the John Birch Society, the Convention of States, all of these different activist organizations. Now, there are some out there. I will say Eagle Forum is an organization that is really more about the family. It's not about, you know, saving the form of government. They get involved in that, but they're really more, they're more focused on the family. And there are other organizations that are like that. But these other, but what we're talking about is political organizations and organizations that are talking about government and governing, like the 10th Amendment Center. When we start looking at all of these different organizations, the Heritage Foundation, not one of them, well, actually, there are a few. The We the People Foundation with Bob Schultz and the National Liberty Alliance and the Constitution Association are three I can speak offhand that are advocates for the supporting of Republic Review and obtaining full Constitution compliance. And so I could actually start going through and listing, like Loudoun Liberty, Loudoun for Liberty. Forgive me if I got that wrong. But bottom line is that there's all of these different organizations that are being created. Citizens for Liberty in South Dakota. So when we start looking at, and as a matter of fact, the Wyoming Party, the Republican Party of Wyoming, is the only party that has taken a stand in supporting constitutional compliance. The only one. So there's no reason why you can't initiate and actually start taking back the Constitution with your party if you're the chair. And that's what I'm trying to prove to people. We need to actually take control of everything. Because once you take control of the party and make it all about Constitution compliance and not about a party agenda and holding public servants accountable to their oath, period. No latitude. It is black and white. Because law is black and white. When we start living that full spirit of the law, then we're actually going to start seeing the law enforced. But until then, as long as these public servants know that they have all the latitude of doing what I call political theatrics, where they can get up and use doublespeak, and they can use rhetoric, and they can say, oh, well, we decided and we've compromised that we have to do these things like these emergency powers. They're coming. I started the show off talking about emergency powers being invoked again. They're planning on taking us to the next level. That level may break us. That level may cause a financial catastrophe. If it does, and the federal government says, because we're in charge, because we control everything, which they don't, they only control those few things that have been delegated to them. And as a matter of fact, they have no delegation for them to maintain an army. They cannot maintain an army beyond 2 years. There's no such thing as a standing army. And when you look at the IRS, the ATF, you look at all these enforcement agencies, those are standing armies. They need to be shut down. But the way we do that is we have to start working at the county and the community level, and we need you to do this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract. And with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.